This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. A new report about the migration of trees north and westward in the U.S. in response to climate change has underscored once more how little time we have left to waste. Climate action has stalled after the Paris Accord, and the election of Donald Trump has thrown a wrench into many plans to deal with global warming. The news is grim, but all is not lost. A new report from the Institute for Policy Studies offers a path for states to quickly adopt renewable energy infrastructure in the absence of federal action. The report is entitled How States Can Boost Renewables with Benefits for All. The report's author is Basav Sen. He is the Climate Justice Project Director at the Institute for Policy Studies, and he joins me now. Welcome to the program, Basav.
Thank you for having me on your show, Sonali.
So first, the report focuses on this aspect of how states deal with renewable energy, which is the idea of something that people, even those who follow climate justice, may not be familiar with, which are RPSs, Renewable Portfolio Standards. Let's start there. What is a renewable portfolio standard, and how does it apply to this issue of renewable energy?
So briefly, renewable portfolio standard is legislation at the state level that mandates utilities to increase the share of energy that they get from renewables on a fixed timetable. And currently, 29 states plus the District of Columbia have renewable portfolio standards. So what that does is it increases the penetration of renewables and decreases the share of electrical power coming from fossil fuels in the grid. As I said, 29 states and the District of Columbia have these standards, but that still means there are states where you do not currently have an RPS where you can enact it. There are states that currently have an RPS in which you have the potential to expand it and to accelerate the timetable and raise the targets. Also, there's the issue of cleaning up your RPS, because sometimes your renewable portfolio standards may include questionable energy sources such as biofuels and trash incineration, which are importantly not climate neutral and also have adverse impacts on people of color and low-income communities.
So basically, a state with an RPS has a kind of a plan for how much of their power, electricity, et cetera, they get from renewables, which renewables they use. So I'm assuming there is great variability between the RPSs of various states, right?
Absolutely. For example, Hawaii has the most ambitious RPS in the country. They have a standard of 100% renewables by 2045, while other states have much weaker RPS standards.
So at the state level, this, you know, rather than having a mandate coming down from the federal government, states are, of course, free to enact these portfolios, free to enact plans for how they will transition to renewable energy. Much of that, I'm guessing, depends on the political makeup of those states at the time. It shouldn't be surprising that Hawaii, California, et cetera, are more ambitious than some other states. What are the ways in which people can enact RPSs in states where there are none right now? For example, Florida doesn't have a renewable portfolio standard. How can, in the absence of even state political impetus, can grassroots people or local municipalities make a transition to renewables?
One quick clarification. In most cases, municipalities cannot enact renewable portfolio standards because utility regulation happens at the state level. There are some exceptions, like the District of Columbia, which is both a city and a quasi-state. And so DC has its own RPS, which is 50% electricity from renewables by 2032. And sometimes cities may have city-owned utilities, in which case they can make the transition. Like Austin, Texas has a city-owned utility and has their own plan for transition to renewables independent of the state renewable portfolio standard. But that being said, for the most part, it is states who do this, not municipalities. Now, I point out in my report a case study of how renewable portfolio standards expansion happened in Oregon last year. And now, admittedly, Oregon is a state which has a liberal reputation. But at the same time, I think the lessons for how the campaign was run in Oregon is helpful even to people in states with a political climate that is less friendly to renewable energy. The key is to build a very broad coalition, bringing together low-income communities, communities of color, labor, rural communities, small businesses, build a very broad multi-issue, multi-sector coalition, impress upon state legislators that there is a very broad base of support. And that can counteract the influence of big business and the fossil fuel industry. And interestingly, you pointed out Florida. In Florida, there have been attempts to penalize owners of solar panels, but there has been massive pushback against it, even in a state with a conservative reputation like Florida. Because even people who are politically conservative, once they realize the value of renewable energy in saving them money. Because if you install solar panels on your roof and your power consumption goes down, that saves you money. And any excess power that you generate, you can sell back to the grid.
So let's actually talk about the issue of solar, which is a big part of your report. And solar, you know, given how much the cost of solar panels have fallen in recent years, this becomes a very effective way to switch to renewables. But it is often something that middle class or upper middle class and wealthy families have had access to, because often you have to buy the panels outright or you have to lease them, or it's not very clear. You know, the states sometimes offer subsidies, sometimes they don't. What do you suggest as a blueprint for how states can adopt solar energy in a fair and equitable way? Because that is something that your report also emphasizes, which I think is very important, that you know, low-income communities should be able to take advantage of renewable energies as well.
Yes, and as I point out in my report, low-income communities are disproportionately people of color and also disproportionately renters. So the entire model of being able to install solar panels on your own roof does not apply if you're renting or if you're living in multifamily apartments. Which is why there is this growing trend of shared renewables or community solar, where you can have solar panels offsite, not on your own roof, but on, let's say, a school building or a church or a government building or some other building in your community. And the panels are collectively owned by people living in the community, and they get the benefits, they get the bill credits in proportion to how much of the array they own. And what is more, states have actually taken measures to make these panels more accessible to low-income people. For example, in Oregon, 10% of the capacity of shared renewables are set aside for low-income people. And likewise, in Colorado, there's a 5% set aside. And in California, there's a program called Multifamily Affordable Solar Homes, where you actually get funding from the state to put up solar panels on multifamily buildings with low-income tenants. So there are existing models in place to make access to solar energy more equitable in terms of income, in terms of race, and in terms of removing the barrier to access to solar energy that home ownership represents.
Right. Now, Basav, the Trump administration has made it a big issue that fossil fuel industries need to continue because communities depend on them for good jobs. Trump has attempted to make promises, for example, to coal miners because they depend on coal jobs. But can't renewable energy, can't transitioning to renewable energy at the state level also create good jobs, perhaps even better jobs?
Absolutely. And I would characterize the administration's claim as a bald-faced lie. The government's own data from the Department of Energy show that renewable energy actually creates disproportionately more jobs, not just more jobs, but disproportionately more jobs than fossil fuels. Just as one small example, coal-fired power generation accounts for 26% of power generating capacity in the United States, and solar energy represents just 2%. And yet, solar jobs are more than twice coal-fired power generation jobs. So you can imagine how many more jobs will be created if instead of investing in obsolete technologies like coal, we put our money and our public investment into expanding solar energy and wind energy. And also, some of the fastest growing, like the one fastest growing occupation in the country, is wind turbine service technician. And these service technicians make a median wage that is well above the national median wage and higher than the median wages of many fossil fuel occupations.
Wind
So
turbine
not
service
only.
technicians. Okay, that's a good career goal then for people.
Absolutely, these are skilled workers. And so what it shows is that renewable energy creates lots of good jobs. So this excuse that we need to shore up coal in order to preserve jobs is a lie. I
Right.
do
What they
not
really
want to
mean
minimize.
is that we need to shore up coal to preserve the profits of the coal industry and the cushy
Absolutely.
jobs of the
Absolutely.
CEOs of fossil fuel companies. Let's
I
talk
do not,
about,
however, just one thing. I do not want to minimize the fact that coal miners need to be transitioned to other careers. They need job training and they need preferential placement for jobs because it is not their fault that that they're being put out of work. They are workers in a capitalist economy. They, took the jobs that were available in their area, and they were unsafe jobs, and they were jobs that exposed them to things like miner's lung disease. But they were also jobs that provided a family supporting wage. So I do not blame coal miners for being coal miners, and I do not want them to be penalized for the polluting ways of the companies they work for. So I wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, of course, that's absolutely important. It's actually very sad to see Trump make promises to people who are desperate that he is likely not going to be able to keep. In terms of what states can do to transition to renewable energy, your report suggests solar and wind are going to be the two main ways in which this transition can happen, right?
Absolutely,
So then
yes.
the question becomes, in the absence of federal action, say Trump manages to, and there's some doubt, a lot of doubt about this, but say he does manage to pull the United States out of the Paris Accord, can action at the state level continue to help us meet the Paris Accord goals if we adopt these pathways towards renewable energy and solar and wind in particular?
I believe it can. What it will need is more than just transitioning the electrical grid off of renewables, which is what I talk about in this report. But this report is the first in a series of reports looking at what states and cities can do to address climate change effectively. Another major sector to deal with is transportation, which is another thing I'll be looking at. And that would include redesigning our cities and communities to reduce dependence on auto transportation, and making public transit more accessible, especially to low-income communities and communities of color, but also more broadly expanding transit, and also transitioning to electric vehicles. So that's all something we need to address. And then we also need to save energy, to conserve energy. We need to kind of do both, reduce our consumption and increase the share of energy that we're using that comes from renewables. And then we have to redesign trash because landfills are a source of methane, and trash incineration, besides being horribly polluting, is also a source of greenhouse gases. We have to redesign food and agriculture because that's another source of greenhouse gas emissions, and so on and so forth. But by taking action on all of these fronts, states and cities can actually make a major impact on greenhouse gases, making the federal government irrelevant.
Well, these days, the irrelevance of the federal government might be a condition for survival. I want to thank you so much, Basa, for joining us. Where can people get a hold of the report directly and hopefully find a way to enact it at their own state level?
Absolutely. You can go to our website, www.ips-dc.org. And if you look at our publications, you'll find the report. Or if you look under our subject areas, under climate policy, you will find the report.
And we'll post a link directly to the report as well for our audience. Thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck with the future reports.
Okay, and thanks a lot for having me on your show, Sonali.
My guest is Basav Sen, Climate Justice Project Director at the Institute for Policy Studies, author of the new report we've just been discussing, How States Can Boost Renewables with Benefits for All. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.